everybody, and welcome to the Pine Room Podcast, coming to you from the Pine Room Studios down here in beautiful Wheeling, West Virginia. I believe this is episode 152. Chris here with, I'm sitting between Jeff to my right and Matt to my left, and we're here, and how you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. You know what? We've done this enough, Chris, but I think I'm just realizing more and more each time I'm with you. I think you could pull off like one of those 1-800 voices and make ladies' toes curl.
What's that pay?
You know, I tell you what, I think if you get the right clientele on the other end, I think you could actually live a decent life, my friend.
Well, you know what? I'd do my best.
I'll be honest, it's pretty sexy, Chris.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I appreciate that.
But I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Good.
Well done, Chris.
Matt, I just saw you earlier, and I assume you're doing well.
The weather today is not bad. I like this. It's a little chilly out there, but not, warmer, but not super hot. I don't need that 80 stuff already. So we're going to get tomorrow. So I'm not real excited about that. Not real excited about a lot of things, but I'm here. I'll do the best that I can do. Nothing I can do to control most of those things.
So true.
Here we are on another week in a messed up world. But
it's so true.
Yeah. Well, and Jeff, since the brackets were out on Sunday night, and Matt and I had 2 days of radio talking about the Mountaineers and a reaction. I'm just curious to get your thoughts on how that all went down. And now we agreed upon it. W probably got screwed a little bit, but I just was kind of like what your reaction is to all the overreaction from the governor, the AD at WVU, and not so much the fans, but just the way they reacted to that.
Well, I do think I think we're going to run into, as we always have, whether it be March Madness, and now we're in a 12-team playoff. That 165th team is always going to feel left out. The 13th team is always going to be left out. Do I think that West Virginia got screwed? I do. I'm not sure that litigation comes into play. I'm not even sure what you sue about with something on those lines. But I'm sure some brighter mind than mine will be able to figure that out. But I guess what happens if they prove the NCAA wrong? They're not going to get in the tournament. Are they going to get reimbursed for maybe money that they lost?
But
really, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, you're not hosting a game.
Yeah.
So you're not. There's no revenue coming into your arena.
I think you do get a profit share for making
it.
Yeah.
So maybe you sue for
however many teams per each conference qualify, then they get a pool of money, and then the more they get, and then they split it up amongst their institutions in the conference.
So that makes sense. So I guess if you're going to litigate against something like that,
The Big 12 should be kind of pissed off too.
Yeah, right.
I mean, which is odd to me. They never spoke up and said anything. I thought I'd hear something out of them, at least a stern reaction, like, we got shafted here. North Carolina, on paper, is not anywhere near as good as we are. But that's their own fault. They lost to Colorado, and they put themselves in that spot where you're letting idiots decide your fate instead of just earning your way into it.
Then it would have removed all doubt.
Right.
Now,
right.
Do you think the guy, and I don't know his name, the guy that actually is what is on the NCAA, is on the NCAA board, but is obviously a
Carolina's AD?
Yes. Yeah. So it's the AD, actually.
Yeah.
Bubba
something.
Cunningham, yeah. I believe.
Cunningham, yeah. Good.
I tell you this much. I know we live in a crooked world, and I do understand that. But I tell you what, and he says he removed himself. He left the room during that time or whatever the case might be. It'd be hard to look people in the eyes, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be.
It's human nature.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, man. I just think that would be the part that if I was him, I wouldn't feel good about myself right now.
No. And did you see the bonus that he got today?
That was the other thing. Well, he gets a bonus attached to that.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That wasn't the best time to break that news, which I guess is on file down there. It's probably, it's a state school.
Well, and then did you see the other things, which they're not good enough to make a run in this tournament? But if he made the Sweet 16, he got like 75,000. If he got to the Final Four, I think it was like 100,000.
That's amazing. What the hell did he do?
That's honestly what I was going to say. What part does he have in what is?
I mean, maybe cultivating some NIL, but it's North Carolina, for God's sakes. Yeah. The basketball program's like,
you and I can do that.
Yeah, I mean that's it's not hard to sell Carolina basketball. Yeah, you got Michael Jordan and Dean Smith. Good Lord.
Yeah, and we were talking about Morrissey. And some of his quotes, we talked about on the radio, but he said it was robbery at the highest level. And what was the other thing?
Miscarriage of justice.
I mean,
that's, come on.
And he was taught, and he also made the comment about, well, he wanted to open up an investigation to see if there was any nefarious activities or backdoor deals. Well, let's just say that's what happened, and they proved that, yeah, okay, there, you know, there was a handshake deal, whatever. What's that going to solve? Well, I mean, are they just going to say, okay, well, I can sleep well at night, knowing that they did some...
There's no body to enforce that.
Well, the other thing is, so say it's Matt and Chris that's in the room doing the backdoor deal, and then all of a sudden Patrick Morrissey raises this big stink. Is that going to make Chris and Matt come out and say, you know what, yep, backdoor deal, we shook hands? Like, what's that going to, that's not going to bring anything to light.
No.
I mean, I do understand him sticking up for his state, and I do respect that. But, you know, there's still a place, man, that we need to keep lawyers out of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't know what the perfect storm is. I really don't. I'm probably not smart enough to figure that out. I guess at the end of the day, if you guys are looking at it this way, really should ADs be a part of this process?
No, I'm totally against it. I think there's a I get where Morrissey's coming from. I think the thing is corrupt. I think the governing board, I think the NCAA has been corrupt for years. Yeah. I think the way they do things is corrupt. I don't doubt for one second that there's backdoor deals going on, because you know the next time the North Carolina AD, when somebody's got his back, he's going to have their back the next time. So when their school's just on the bubble, they're going to get in because he's going to pull his weight behind them because they did him this favor, got him his bonus, got his team in there. That's going to happen. There's no doubt. Morrissey's right about it. Can he do anything? No. Does he look like a jackass trying to? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But they shouldn't be letting people that work at these schools decide that. They honestly, if they really wanted to do this the right way and seed teams correctly and actually have the right teams in, they would let bookmakers do it, because they have a much better idea of what's going on and who the better teams actually are. It proves itself every time. You got lower seeds favored in certain games and they usually pan out. So I would say bookmakers would be your best. Computer ratings would be the next best. And I know everybody hated that BCS thing in football, mm-hmm. but at least you didn't have the human element of backdoor deals going on with the computers anyway.
That's a good point, though. Well, it really is.
And I mentioned it today about – so if – and I don't know how long those guys have got together and went over all this, the brackets, and before they made the announcement on Sunday. But you know, if you're the – I won't say you're the Carolina AD, because
– He's rocking it.
Talk about, so.
He but, definitely could be the Carolina AD.
But so me and Matt, I don't know what other – Matt, do you know what other kind of NCAA people were involved? Was it all ADs? Or
yeah, or administrators of some kind, yeah.
Okay, so Matt and I, we know you pretty well, but as we're both ADs of other schools – But we spend 3 or 4 days with you. You know, we like you, and we go out to dinner, we have drinks, and then we have to decide, and we get along just fine with you. And then you have to recuse yourselves while we decide and talk about North Carolina. And it's almost like maybe an understanding that, yeah, we got your back.
Yeah.
You know, we had 4 good days with you, we got your back. And just with the understanding that
you'll have ours
when it comes to, I mean, it's. They act like, well, you know, we did it fair and square because he recused himself. He went to another room and played with his nuts, knowing that he was going to fucking get, you know, they were going to put them in a game or make the tournament. So
I still think it comes down to one thing, fellas, and I know we've talked about this a lot on this program. You know, they insult our intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Certainly
right?
do.
They really do. And here's the deal. There's probably some jackoffs out there that swallow this and be like, that's the way it went down. But it just, 90% of people, I would hope, that are smart enough to figure out that obviously this isn't on the up and up.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? I'm not a Carolina hater. I've never been a Carolina hater, and I really don't care either way. And actually, this is probably the least amount of college basketball I've watched in one season. Like, I don't know if I've really watched a game from beginning to end, because Notre Dame is atrocious to watch. But it's just so I don't have a big dog in the fight, because I don't know much about it this year. If I probably had a gun to the head and completely switching gears, if I had to pick who I thought was going to win, I was going to say Florida.
Yeah.
But because I did get to watch them a little bit this year. So that would be my choice. But this is nothing new, Matt. Like you alluded to, the NCAA has been corrupt. I don't know if there's any way to fix it. I really like your idea, though, of the bookmakers.
Yeah.
Because it really does make sense. Now, granted, is there a possibility of that getting corrupt too? You know, people getting to them or whatever the case might be. But at their end game, their pockets get bigger instead of a handshake.
They have no reason to manipulate anything, because they are setting markets for things that people are going to be betting in. So there's really – they have to be very careful. They could get, you know, if they do things unjustifiably and have wrong teams in wrong areas or seated incorrectly or whatever, they're opening themselves up to vulnerability, and they could be exposed and then, you know, lose a lot financially. So it would be in their best interest to get it as tight as possible, have the right teams in there, their very best matchups seated correctly, and make it really hard for people to pick the winners. Mm-hmm. That's what they would want to do.
Well, Matt, with that in mind, and you've been in this business for quite a while now, is the handle a lot larger depending on the teams that are actually competing and or the bigger the game or the more important the
game? Yeah, so that's a misconception that the brand name stuff, is that what you mean, like kind of partially?
Yeah, because I had heard them talking about, well, maybe
that might be for crowds, but it's not going to be for bookmaking.
Well, I heard some theory online last night. They said, well, maybe because more people would tend to gamble on Texas and North Carolina rather than, which I didn't totally agree with that. If you like to gamble on sports, you don't care.
And these Power 5 conferences, any of the teams are going to have a big enough draw that you're going to draw attention. So it doesn't really make a difference. West Virginia's in a big league too. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't matter. And these standalone games are going to draw huge handles. These first four, again, another money grab. You put in four extra teams, but you get single standing games there that people are interested in. They're going to bet them no matter what. I mean, okay, maybe in certain jurisdictions down in the Carolinas, which they've just added sports betting in the last less than 2 years, so it's still pretty new to them. Maybe down there, Carolina's going to get a lot more action, but mm-hmm. we have it in West Virginia too. I mean, they have a larger population, so if that, mm-hmm. but that's only going to affect Carolina sports books. It's not going to, mm-hmm. overall in the landscape, if I'm in Alabama and I'm wanting to watch these games, I'm betting on it. I don't care who's in them. If I'm in California and I can't bet, I'm trying to call outside the state to get down action on it. It doesn't matter. West Virginia, we're going to bet them no matter where we're mm-hmm. at. So I don't think it matters that much. Maybe television wise it might, because you know, North Carolina's got a lot more alumni all time than West Virginia, but as far as gambling handle, these games are, they're like mini Super Bowls. These are like, so they're like, we'll do enough for on these first round games that'll be like an NFL game for us. I mean, that's big. NFL's the benchmark. If you're hitting NFL level numbers on any of these games, is a great thing. And then obviously, as the week goes on, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I mean, this is like Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, like right after each other, 3 days in a row. So, no, I don't think, from my standpoint, it wouldn't affect more than a few books, maybe, to the positive. But most of them, you're going to bet no matter what. It's an NCAA tournament, and we love it. We've loved it since we were kids, although I don't love it as much as I used to. But, you know, you still get that little excitement in you, little bounce in your step during the week because you got ball games on all the time.
It's funny you say that, because the wifey actually said last night, she feels like that this tournament, hype-wise, is died off through the years. Mm-hmm. Do you guys believe that?
No, I think it has.
What do you think that is, though? Because I couldn't disagree with her.
Yeah, I think maybe just oversaturation. Maybe we just have so many things. Like, back before, we couldn't gamble on games legally in our states. Like, you know, the whole season goes on. The Big Eight back in the day. They had, you know, good teams, Kansas, Missouri, and whoever. So you have that, and you have, I guess, your Big Ten country, since we're in Ohio State country. So you're watching all these games on your TV, and Big Monday, and the Big East back then was awesome. Yeah, so you have like awesome. The very best league, and you're watching Syracuse and Georgetown and St. John's, and you're watching those games, but you never have any action on them. I mean, unless you're betting illegally, you have nothing. Like, so then you get to March Madness and you're like, oh, I got brackets, I got fantasy leagues, I got all these extra action that I never got to have during the season because you just didn't have that stuff. Now it's like every night you got 500 games available, not just in basketball, but in all different sports. They're on your phone. You just touch your phone. You do whatever you want. So my buildup for March Madness isn't nearly what it would be, because I already have had my urges satisfied the whole year in a smaller capacity, but I don't have that desperate, like, oh, March Madness, the greatest thing, filling out brackets, being in all those pools. You just, to me, it's because it's oversaturated. You just have so much gambling throughout your regular life.
That's actually honestly well said. Now, do you guys have any idea, does it affect like, is attendance still good for these games, like first round games and stuff like that?
From what I've gathered, I was happy to hear that some of the arenas that did away with the beer, of course, the last time that I went, they didn't have beer at the arena, which I thought was really stupid. Mm-hmm. And but they brought it back, so I think that's helped drive crowds. I would say that it's probably not quite as good as far as alumni involvement, because that's, again, I used to hear by now, if the Mountaineers would have been in, obviously they're not, but I mean, I would have heard people talking about the, their pending trips coming up. If the Mountaineers get positioned here, I'm going. I would have heard just through the grapevine, either friends of friends or guys I know saying, oh, if the Mountaineers get, you know, within driving distance, we're going. That was always a huge thing. I mean, we knew people that were going to these games all the time. I haven't heard that in several years now, even when they make it. It's so it's dying off. I think it's just people were able to bet in their own states now on their apps, and it just costs so damn much. Well, they scalp these. I mean, look, in our own state down at the high school that's tournament, crazy. They're raising up those room rates five times what they cost on a regular Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. So people were saying, you know what? I'm not going to spend the money. I'm going to still have a good experience. I'm either going to go to a local sports establishment like you may do this weekend, or I'm going to go to a friend's house and parties or a local club or whatever. And I'm going to be able to say, all right, I can reinvest my money in something else instead of lodging and tickets and travel and dealing with people. So I think it's just a trade-off that people are willing to accept now. It's sad, but...
It's very true. And actually, I think your last statement about people, because I know we talked about it last week about... You know, sometimes the comfort of your own home nowadays with dealing with the jack-offs of the world. Do you think that has affected people too?
No doubt about it.
Obviously, you see these people now fighting at the arenas, mostly football games. But all that, I do think that there's a lot, like, and you do hate to say it because I'll be honest, I can't stand the word COVID. But, man, our world truly has changed post-COVID.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, whether we want to accept that or not, but it really has. I think the patience level of people nowadays are completely gone. The respect for humanity is gone. And I think people try to kind of just say, fuck it, it's not worth it anymore to go do something like that where I can sit in my basement.
Yeah.
And I know that. And now a lot of people, I mean... Obviously, people's basements and rec rooms have 2, 3, 4 TVs and stuff like that, where you don't have to go somewhere to watch if you don't have to. So I think it's a perfect storm on why maybe everything in itself isn't as hyped up as it used to be.
Yeah, it all kind of bundles together. I mean, that was bars and stuff were the draw, and now, like you say, people have entertainment systems and set up in their house. I mean, myself, I'm included in that. I got multiple TVs, and you know, sometimes it's not worth going out. A lot of times it isn't. You're just better off. Not just from cost standpoint, because around here it's not ridiculous to go out and drink, but like and watch games. But just from safety, from not wanting to be on the road, just and then it's dealing. All you need to do is get a couple of. And I'm not saying every person's like this, but you're gonna run into people out at these bars. You're gonna get the loudmouth know-it-all. You're gonna get the guy who maybe you haven't seen for a while that won't leave you alone. And it's like it's not like you don't like them, but it's like you want to talk to him for 5 minutes here and there, and that's it. And like you don't need to sit and have them yapping in your ear the whole time, telling them about their kids.
When there's 2 minutes
and
to
this,
go in a tie
right.
game,
and you got like double overtime, and it's like, and you have it everywhere. You run into it all the time, and it's. You know, maybe I'm an asshole for it, but it's come on. People got to be able to read the room and self-awareness. The motto of the whole Pine Room Studios, people just don't have it. And they don't grasp that you're, you know, maybe they're out there trying to watch this game.
And Jeff, and I think for me personally, it's just an old school thing. I mean, I agree with what you're saying about going out and amongst the crowds, and, you know, it's just easier. And a lot of times it's more comfortable to stay at home. But, and we've talked about this before, I know, I just the way, the two things, the way the game is played today, I've lost a lot of interest in the way basketball is played. And this NIL, I can't keep track.
Don't know the players? That hurts, Chris.
And Matt, you remember, even though you're a young kid, you remember this. Those big Mondays and those big East you remember
100%.
Patrick Ewing played what at least 3 years at Georgetown.
Yeah.
He had all these other guys, David Wingate, Reggie Williams, you know, with St. John's had Mullen and Walter Berry, and you and these teams hated each other, and the team stayed together for a long time.
Yeah.
And you couldn't wait till on a Monday night, you know, Syracuse and St. John's.
The same coaches.
Yes.
The same guys. You may have like one transfer a year, like would be, but that's like that in football too, mm-hmm. Jeff. You used to probably be able to name a whole Notre Dame team. Now it's like you're lucky to be able to 100%. Know a couple of guys that stick around for a year or two, and it's all new. And you're right, that's hurt it a lot too, Chris.
And Jeff, I don't think I have watched, other than maybe like if I was at the Vets or somewhere, and a W game was on, and I was there when it started. I have not, and I was there until the game finished, but I wouldn't watch it intently. I didn't. I know I haven't watched a college game from start to finish this year. And that's unusual.
That is. It's very
And the unusual. Older I get, the less I give a
Probably fuck. Only the Mountain East games that we were at.
Yeah.
That'd probably be
yeah.
our only one you were there, too.
That
would be the only ones. But live and in person, yeah.
But I tell you what, though, that tournament, too, I tell you what, there's something, obviously, getting together with all you guys is so much fun, too. But, like, there's just something about going. I take a 12-minute drive from my house. I get to go watch some really good basketball. Yeah. Now, granted, I know that you guys talked about the product nowadays, unfortunately, isn't as good as it once was.
But still a good tournament, and the championship game was really good and exciting.
So I mean, we're blessed to have that in our backyard, and then for another 3 years, which is a good thing, too.
Yes.
And we basically have our own restroom right down the stairs.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really have to wait in line for any beers. I mean, and we can spread out up there in that section. So, yeah, and that's always enjoyable.
Well, it is enjoyable. You got to be careful with that restroom, though, Chris.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We don't know what happened there. Yeah, multi-purpose.
I think somebody may have screwed up there. I think somebody may have screwed up there.
With the sign on the restroom?
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said, I know somebody, when we were asking questions, somebody walked in and there was a female in the restroom.
Oh, yeah.
And so
three urinals,
couple stalls, but you just got
to always
be
laughed at that one day. I don't know if it was on Saturday or Sunday. I remember, I think it was your brother Ace come back from the restroom. He said, "God damn, man, every time I go in there, someone's taking a shit." And I never experienced that when I had to use the restroom. But excuse me, I didn't run into any females or males that thought they were females.
Let's hope not. I'd rather just have the regular female in there than male
than the freak
who's pretending to be a female. Or that just is,
I bet your guys' experience back in the day with your dad's involvement and stuff like that, I bet there was some, well, first and foremost, as we all know, it will never, nothing will ever live up to that.
Never.
Those moments. No. But I bet that would have been some badass times for you guys.
Oh, well, Chris could speak to it a lot more than even me, because a lot of times I was too young to partake in some of the stuff. But I you know, some of the leader years things, but just some of the things that Coach did on those trips were just incredible. So, like, not anything bad. Like, he would go into the press conferences and interview players like 25 beers deep. And it was like dead serious with a tape recorder. And he would go in the locker room and interview players, like, not because he had the media format where, you know, post game interviews in the press room and you're asking questions, but he would go into the actual locker rooms and as a reporter. And he'd be carrying a beer most of the time, and no one was ever the wiser. No one said a damn thing. And we had laughs and times and met so many cool players and so many neat coaches. Over the years, referees from all different parts, from all different schools, from all different areas. It was really cool.
They were from all over the state. And the one thing, Mark, and I remember he gave me this advice a while back, and he would be able to pull that off, because he said, just go and act like you know exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So he walks in, he's got his tape recorder. You know, like I said, he's been drinking all day, but he just goes in. I don't know if he stands or sits down, because I wasn't in there with him, but he asked questions.
Incredible.
And nobody thought anything. Different.
Right to people's lockers, just like right after the game. Like, hey, Mark, so-and-so. He'd make up a name and be like, from the Charleston Gazette. Like,
even though he didn't have any credentials.
No, nothing. Just walk right in there. Could just be a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. Yeah. Probably said West Liberty
on it.
But that's him.
Well, two things. I think that motto of Mark Delbrook is a life lesson, period. Because I think at the end of the day, I mean, half my career, I probably faked it until I made it, right? I mean, at the end of the day, Christ, there's many times I don't know what the fuck I'm doing in life. So, I mean, it is what it is. And two to that is not being afraid to somebody to test you to say, hey, are you supposed to be in here? And then you just play either dumb or whatever the case might be, and then, like, you don't get your feelings hurt, or the fact of the matter, like, you're not afraid to be told no. Like, there's no fear.
Right. I mean, Mark was going to just fight him on and say, well, sir, you're not supposed to be in here. Like, well, Mark knows he's not supposed to be in there. It was fun while it lasted, but they caught him.
All right, well, now I got to go.
But I think it helps when, like, he's coming back there. Everybody's in the back. Remember the back hallway at Charleston? Like, that. Remember that big corridor down there that wrapped around all the locker rooms? That big, long hallway?
Yeah.
And then he would go, like, bear hug the assistant coach of the team that won and, like, get, like,
doesn't
even know him. And then it's like, oh, he's welcome. He's, like, part of the team. He's part of the University of Charleston tonight. Because he was making friends with the coaches, or he drank beer with him the night before at Joey's at the bar next door. I mean, anything was possible. You know how he could set the stage for all that. And then these players, back in those days, there was no media exposure. I mean, there was local media, but you didn't have a whole lot. I remember being up here in Wheeling, and I told this story on the radio. I couldn't even find scores. No one covered this tournament. I was desperate. I couldn't get a hold. There's no cell phones. I couldn't call these guys. My dad and these guys are at the arena some of the days before I was able to come down.
He'd have to wait for
and I'm waiting to see if West Liberty was going to win so I could even go. Yeah. And I'm desperate, and I got no way of finding out. So these youngs in that time, they actually were student athletes. And they're sitting there, and there's this guy that's interested in them and talking to them like they're an NBA player, and like that's cool to them.
100%.
Like, and even though the recordings were just for us to play back and have fun with, but yeah, they didn't know any different. It was really cool. You're right, Jeff. That was a good thing you brought up.
Great experience. Super
some of the parties and the hotel rooms and stuff. I mean,
and the things you guys probably, and I'm sure your dad. How do I say this? I'm sure that he didn't break confidence in a lot of things, but I'm sure that there was probably some things that you guys maybe knew about that maybe you shouldn't knew about. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that would have been kind of cool to be in the know too. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I guess this is going to sound very cheesy. Probably felt like you were kind of a big deal.
Guys were my dad made that tournament for West Liberty into a, and I'm not just saying this because it's him, but he made that into an event, like one, especially, and even when we weren't even very good, like the girls were pretty good and the guys weren't. But then when it started to, like, he wanted the students, our people, to have a great time. He wanted the band to go. He wanted the cheerleaders to go. He wanted the Hilltopper Club officers to go, which Mark and Chris were. And he was taking care of everything. He was getting the rooms. He was taking us out for meals. I mean, he wanted it to be an experience that at the end of the year, everybody did hard work, whether it was on the court, the administration at the school, the guys who were helping raise money for scholarships in those days. We didn't have private, you know, wealthy funded people. These guys are out there reverse raffles and golf scrambles and all this crap that nowadays people just don't even do. You just depend on your big doctors, lawyers, whoever to donate all your money. We didn't have that. So you're working your ass off all season, and this was like the payoff. This was the, you go out, you have a blast every night, you watch the games, you just be around West Liberty people and other people in the WVIAC and Mountain East. And he was huge about that. And to this day, a lot of student athletes at West Liberty who I've known for years and years and years will always just talk about, like, well, Coach Watson always made Charleston really special, so it was special to our teams. The coaches embraced it. It was really cool. So we were lucky that West Liberty was, you know, the way that they were back in then. We had, you know, experiences that we'll remember forever.
I believe that. And I'll be honest with you, once again, kind of cheesy, but I think it's the reality. I'm sure it's kind of humbling too. Like, at the end of the day, for when, like, I know it's very humbling. I mean, my mom's been gone for years now, but like, when people still come up to me and be like, oh, you're Judy Doyle's son, man, what a great lady. Like, that is still to me at 47, Jesus. Just very humbling.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know that's not apples to apples, but what I'm getting at is for people to come up and say, you know, your dad did this, and how long has he been removed now?
Let's see.
10?
Working on 10. Probably at least 8, maybe 9.
So at the end of the day, I mean, that's super cool.
And you know what? And a credit to the student athletes Matt's referring to. And I probably know.
I love that term. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It was appropriate back then.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's a cool term, though. Yeah.
But they were high character people, and they appreciated it. You know, you can get some kid that, you know, that you're young, you're dumb, you don't care, you just take shit for granted. These people didn't, and they knew. And like he said, Coach Watson made it a point to make it special for everybody that was down there. It was a big deal. You got to go down there and participate in a big arena. In the state capitol, and you know, we weren't going to Golden Corral every night. You know, I mean, he made us. And I tell you, and the one thing I have, you know, since I've started going on trips with Jim Watson, and that dates back, I don't know how long, he always wanted to make sure, because Jim was always wanting to show us a new experience, whether it's going somewhere, going to see something, fine dining. I mean, Jim, yeah. I mean, and he's passing on to Matt. I mean, it's. You know, so when you're out of town, he's going to take us to a really nice restaurant that's not a chain, something that we've never experienced before. He, you know, he can tell us what's good, what, you know, what to try, whatever. And he's always been that way, and I appreciate that. I'll be grateful forever, because it was, you know, going down there, and I think my first year was like 1992, and I remember the first day he took us to a Chinese restaurant. I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah. I haven't eaten Chinese. How do you do this?
Yeah, he really didn't have them very many places. Well, we had one here in Wheeling.
He taught me how to pick crabs on an Ocean City trip. Yeah. You know, fucking banging those with the mallet. I'm like, how the fuck you do that? I said, Jim, that's too much work. But I worked at it and I got good. But again, it was about the experience.
Yeah.
To take, you know, I'm his nephew, and he's going on a trip. I want to show him something different. And
that's super, super cool.
It is.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of cheesy like that. I can appreciate that. And it is true. You know what? Money's nice. It really is. And everybody wants to make money. But at the end of the day, it is crazy. The older that you get, and this is probably going to be contradictory to what you guys were saying because you guys were younger then. But isn't it crazy the older you get? Yes, money is very important, but it does come down to experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the deal. You can wear a nice pair of shoes. You can get a nice coat. You can get a nice car. And all that shit's cool. Don't get me wrong. But, man, like when you have a good experience and you spend money on an experience and you take away those memories and stuff like that, I don't know. There's something to say for that.
Yeah. Material items have been escalated of importance over the years, whether it's because of social media or just advertising or just our phones being basically advertising constantly. So I think that is back then we disconnected. We went down there. We didn't have phones. We didn't have any disturbances. That was our life. It was the experience. We were there for that tournament. We were there to have fun with the people that we knew, meet new people, have great time, and there was no distractions. Like, you went down there, there's no way anybody was contacting you. They could call your hotel room phone or something. There was no way. Yeah. Like, you couldn't even be found sometimes. We'd get split up sometimes in the city. You didn't know where somebody was. You're just trying to figure it out. So it was a whole different world. It is. It does make you realize how lucky we were in the run that we had, and my dad retiring and then me being gone from West Liberty and on, and it's worked out. It's weird that it came like full circle that now it's down the road from my house.
That is crazy.
So, you know, we still get a little bit of that taste of that, not what it once was, but still, you know, it's still fun to go to and enjoyable. But yeah, those experiences, I mean, no matter what kind of money you could ever earn, you'll never be able to duplicate those. They're just invaluable to us. I mean, stories will tell forever.
For sure.
Well, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up about the experience compared to like just having money and material things. And do you know Chet and Crystal Ernest?
I just know of them.
Okay, well, we know them. They're regulars down at the club. Well, anyway, and I'll tell you this. Chet's been a longtime diehard AC/DC fan. Loves them. Never seen him in concert. But he always said he'd never want to go to an outdoor show because I guess they're doing one last tour. You know, they're getting old. His wife, Crystal, kept saying, well, come on, let's go. No, no, no. Well, she said, fuck it. I'm getting tickets. And so apparently she got like seats like four rows from the stage. So Chet and I were talking about it one day, and he basically said the same thing because we referenced Pat McCormick. You know, it's like, okay, sadly, he passed last May, 59. You know, it's like, fuck it. It's all about the experience going places. He goes, I don't know how much he paid for those tickets. He said, I probably don't want to know, but then again, I don't give a fuck. He said, we work for a living, and it's so true. It was like, fuck it. We want to go see them. That's my band. Last chance, probably last and only chance to go see him. So go do it. And like we said, the same thing, like you don't have to have a fucking $2,000 watch or, you know, a $700 coat or whatever. I mean, those things are okay, but like it's all about, to me, and I, it's more important to me as I get older to go and experience our things, whatever it might be, as opposed to just say, well, I want to save my money. I don't want to go spend money on that because I want to buy this a pair of fucking boots. Well, fuck that.
No, and I agree 100%. And I, once again, I mean, there's nothing wrong with liking nice things. No. Like, that's not what I'm getting at all. But I just think that I do think the older you get and finding that balance in life. I mean, obviously, everybody wants to put money in their 401k to quote unquote retire one day. Well, I guess that game of life, of trying to find that balance where you spend enough now to still enjoy life, to hopefully get to that quote unquote golden ticket where you're not doing the day to day grind and have enough money and you're not getting up for to an alarm clock. Like, I mean, that is, there's true balance in life with that. I wish I had the answer. My answer is tonight for the Mega Millions. That's about the only answer I've got. But, but even a couple more things about that. It is very cool. And I don't know 90%. I mean, you guys know people more than I do. 90% of the people at River City, I don't know, but I still think it's very cool going in there before the games, and everybody's got the same reason why they're there, which is super cool. And second of all, Chris, my one takeaway from last weekend was you saying that the tournament back in the day would have went till Sunday. Excuse me.
Saturday.
Yeah.
So it was usually like Tuesday to Saturday. Now it's Wednesday to Sunday.
Saturday was the final.
Like, yeah, I used to have it on.
Oh, then, you know, maybe I misunderstood you. No, I know what you said. If it was this platform, how bad it would suck for you guys if you were going to have to drive home now on a Sunday.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
To come home being boozed up for 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then obviously everybody's probably partying like a rock star on Saturday night down in Charleston. If that would have been the
platform. Oh, yeah, that was it.
That would not have been fun.
They moved it to Sunday down there the last few years that we were down there, and it really sucked because, like, even when we won, everybody went home. So it was like, I would stick around because I had so much stuff to haul back, and I was like, I have responsibilities, and I really basically just couldn't bear to drive after. I guess I could have, but stayed an extra night and would drive back Monday. But even that was depressing. And we used to have that. It was almost like you were like going through withdrawal. It was depressing that the week was ending. But if you kept doing it, you would be dead probably.
Yeah, yeah.
And not even just from the drinking, but just from the being up late in the busy schedule and all the stuff.
Yeah, and you're not in your own bed.
Yeah.
And you know, you're in a hotel room with 3-4 other guys, and whoever knows might just find a place to sleep, and it had to be our room. But it was that stuff was, and I don't miss it because we did it so much. It's like, you know, what's that saying? Like, don't be sad that it's over, be glad that it happened, or something like that.
Yep.
Which, and we got so many years to experience it, so it's kind of nice now. And it's, you know, like you said, we got a 5-minute drive to park and walk into the arena, and a quick drive home and get in your own bed.
Did it become? I guess that's a really good point. Did it get to the point of monotonous, even though I was all fun and it was obviously a great time, but after year after year after year, did it get to the point of that at all? No.
I would say no. It was the highlight of my life. Like, I often told people that, like, you could offer me a all expense paid vacation anywhere and I would take the WVIC tournament over that any time, not even hesitate. So nowadays it's a little bit different, I guess, just because I'm not as involved and things have changed and it's just not the same camaraderie amongst the schools and stuff, so it's a lot different. But no, back in those days when we were going to Charleston, I mean, there wasn't one time where I was like, geez, I don't really feeling it this year. I was amped up and ready to go. Man, it was an absolute highlight.
Because we were pretty disappointed when the word got out that it was moving from Charleston to Wheeling, and it was like, geez, what's this going to be like? And I mean, we've adapted pretty well, I'd say, but I never got tired of going down there. Yeah.
And it worked out.
Never once.
It worked out perfect for us, though, because by that time, the administration changed at West Liberty, and it was not good. And things were not the same, and there wasn't going to be any more comping. There wasn't going to be any more athlete experience. It was just going to be just like every other school. Instead of standing out and being unique, we were not going to be that anymore. So it worked out very good. My dad was out. I was out. And it was moving to Wheeling. So it ended up, I think one year it bled over. My brother went down there. He was the only one. And he was just like, and I'm actually glad I didn't go, because honestly, I probably would have had tears in my eyes of how depressed I was that it was so different. Like, everything was different. They were ending it on Sunday, which was weird. It just, there was no, like, for the first time in, geez, I mean, 40 something years, my dad wasn't a part of the administration for West Liberty. I mean, it was just totally different.
That
would have been like a real shot, like just a total, just totally changing everything. And actually probably would have made me a little bitter, so I'm glad I wasn't there that year. But
so hold on, Ace went down by himself?
Yeah, well, he went down
the following year.
He had a couple of guys that said, hey, you want to come down, shack up with us in your room? You know, we didn't have any, there was no resources left that we could have. There's nothing.
Yeah, that's
so it's totally different. So he was the only one that went, and it bothered him for a while.
I
like
bet
he
it did.
He was like really like had massive nostalgia, like just texting us depressed about it, like why he was there. He's like, this is just not the same. He's like, this is terrible, actually. And then it ends up moving back to Wheeling. So then we were able to get our friend group back and at least having some involvement in it, not to the extent that we were, but that, which has been really good.
So. How did you choose 309?
So,
well, I'm just assuming based on where we sat.
Absolutely.
In Charleston.
Most of the time when we would, some of our best, and I can't say this all the time because that arena was big and sometimes you had different areas where you had to sit and you didn't have a choice because you were kind of, there's other groups of people. But I always like to be sitting facing the benches of the teams. And I kind of tried to mirror, I got some pictures that I had from when we were in Charleston of like where we spent the most time at. And there was a spot that was right across like the main entrance of the pass gate, which is kind of where we were in West Banco. And we saw both benches, the scorer's table, because I always like to be facing the coaches like most of the time. And we tried to get the same look, like the closest look I could get to make me remember how it was there. So that's how.
Oh, dude, that's super cool.
Yeah. So that's just how.
There's method to the madness.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's just one day. I think I was the first one to go up there during when it was in Wheeling. It was an afternoon, and I went over and I scouted it. I was like, I think this is kind of like what we did, what we had. And so we went there and was like, hey, guys, let's try 309 out. If we don't like it, we'll move. So when we went, and it's been like that ever since.
Because, know, when you're up in that section, when you look down to your left, once you go down the steps, then there's that, when you're kind of walking and then there's those tables.
Yeah.
So that would kind of be where our seats would have been. And like because some of those seats were like even right with the baseline, right. But we were back at like more at a catty corner. But they were perfect seats, and Jesus, I mean the amounts of beer that we had in that section
and laughs. Oh.
And the ones that I shouldn't even say this, but the ones that we took in because they didn't sell it.
Yeah, for a while you didn't sell it.
For the longest time they didn't.
That was another big problem we had. That was another one of the ones that really put a damper on it. There was issues with nothing to do with anything we did or anybody that we knew, but they had issues with like officials getting into disputes with crowd people, like off the clock, like guys were going up and drinking afterwards, and then people were going up to them like mouthing off about games that they had worked earlier in the day. Fuck. And of course, and those guys aren't going to put up with that, and then it gets into a bad incident, and then here comes the commissioner. And I remember my dad pleading with him. I'm like, Barry, you don't want to do this. Like, you're really going to alienate a lot of these people that come down here, spend their hard-earned money to come down to this tournament every year. And he's like, nope, can't have any more incidents like that. So they did away with it. And that was one thing I'll give Reed Amos total credit for.
Yep.
When he became commissioner and it turned to be in the Mountain East, that was the first thing that he did, because he knew enough about the people that went there. Like, you need to have that. And there was a few other incidents in the past with AB fans and state fans and stuff that just happens at games. Nothing to the level of these football and basketball or baseball games where people are getting beat up and killed. Just jawing, maybe a little separating. Like, you know, a little escalated incidents for sure, even players involved. But it had more to do with probably drinking 9 gin and tonics at the Embassy Suites happy hour than it had to do with the beer being sold in the Coliseum, Chris, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was mostly all the pregame festivities. So,
and I know people want to say, and I do get it, you don't need alcohol to have fun, blah, 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 this and that. But it's no different. I mean, people would bust our balls when we would go, whether it be post-1 games, or even like when we were traveling at Young post-1 games. I mean, you packed a fucking cooler,
yeah.
You put it in a Yeti cup, and you enjoyed watching your kid with a beer. And I know probably the anti-people would be like, well, that's absolutely bullshit. As long as you're not escalating, like as long as you're not acting a fool and you're sitting there like you would be in your living room or whatever the case might be, there's nothing wrong with enjoying an adult beverage and watching a sporting event.
No.
And there's nothing like it.
No, right.
There's nothing like that, right? I mean, it's American.
Yeah. Would we have still had fun without booze? Okay. Yeah, to some extent. But it just makes you more relaxed. It makes things come about. Conversations that you have with strangers that maybe you wouldn't even have had. You bump into people that are drinking somewhere or whatever, and you make friends with people that you'll remember forever. I mean, it happens all the time. You make friends with people from other schools, other administrations, all that stuff. Alcohol is always the thing that ties you together. Yeah. I mean, it brings people together. It really does.
I mean, it's no different.
When you use this the right way, just like anything else.
Well, and that's true. I mean, it's no different on, I mean, I'm a former cigarette smoker. You know, the cigarette people stick together.
Yeah.
And you get to the, you know what, you want to go have a smoke, you go out, it's the camaraderie of having a cigarette together. I mean, I know that's dumb, but it's just facts.
It's not dumb. And you know, it's funny you say that is because we had, you know, we had friends, well, Kevin, who would smoke and at the tournament, and there was always the smokers area. And every time he would go out there, he'd meet somebody from another school, and then they'd be chit-chatting about, well, this player might not play, or this guy's hurt, or whatever. You'd always get scooped because all the smokers are out there out on the balcony at the Charleston Coliseum. That was like a big thing. You got intel from out there. There was people in the know out there. So, yeah, it was neat. They unify just like drinkers.
Well, it's true. I mean, you can have religion bringing people together, right, and a different element. You have alcohol that brings people together.
That was our religion, the Mountain East tournament.
But, you know, you think about it. Whether you, when I say growing up, like high school, whenever you started to drink with your friends, and even in the college, even now, like most all the funny stories you're ever going to tell,
period,
involved alcohol.
Period.
I mean, you and your best friends probably don't talk about, hey, man, remember that fucking test in high school? I got a fucking 95 and you only got a 90.
It doesn't happen that way.
No, it's just about something fucking stupid you did because you were, you know, you drank four quarts of beer or something.
Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. That's nothing new. That's from the beginning of time with alcohol, right?
I mean,
that was the camaraderie of alcohol. And I know, unfortunately, alcohol brings out the worst in people too. But
it
also,
but
it also, kind of like what you said, it can bring out the best in people. If you have somebody that's maybe a little bit more laid back and reserved, and that person has an adult beverage or two, and it kind of loosens the jewels a little bit and brings their other side out. It's always nice to see that with people, without a doubt. And be careful what you wish for, as we all know, because at the end of the day, that can be bad news too. But
you're right, it's a bridge. Because, I mean, years ago, like when I first started going down there, I wasn't nearly as outgoing as I might be today and just be willing to talk to people. But as I got older and then being with Mark all the time and drinking, you know, it's easy to start a conversation and people like to talk. And then if you sit down and you're talking to somebody that's driving you nuts and it's all about them, then you get up and you go find somebody else.
Yeah.
But you're right though. And a lot of times when Matt was talking about the relationships we made, we probably made a lot of connections or friends, but we only saw them at the tournament.
Yeah,
you know, hardly ever communicated with them in the off season or when we weren't there. And still, there were no cell phones. But then you knew it. Okay, so and so from this school is going to be there, looking forward to seeing them. And
you always reminisce. You always see the people in the AB pull over, and you come in and say, "Go Battlers," and that immediately strikes up a conversation. Like, "Who are you? Oh, you're West Slib." Like, what? And, yeah, I mean, there was connection. We did that too with going on to when West Liberty was good with Crutchfield, and we went to NCAA tournament like events and nationals, and we're meeting people from farther distances away than just the West Virginia schools, and here we're meeting people from Minnesota State and Bellarmine, as Chris is very fond of, and it was neat. I mean, it was all that because of sports and because of alcohol.
Yeah. I think it's a no-brainer. I tell you what, it would be wild to me. Can you imagine never having a drink? I mean, I know we all like our adult beverages, and I've died off a lot. I've definitely died off a lot. But when I still do it, I mean, I hate the feeling the next day. But I can't imagine going through life and not knowing what a buzz is or you know, this is old news, but like when who's the comedian, the machine, the guy that does the machine, Bert Kreischer. And he says, "I will always stay healthy enough with my body," meaning as in my blood levels, "I will always try to focus on my health enough to always to be able to drink," just because I couldn't imagine life without a buzz.
Right.
And, you know, there's probably a lot of people that think that's a fucking dumbass statement, but I get it.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people think it's dumb, but I'm behind you 100%. I agree with that.
I mean, this quote, every time someone brings that up, it makes me think of this quote now. And most people say it's Frank Sinatra, yeah. But other people say Dean Martin about that. I feel sorry for people who don't drink when they wake up in the morning. That's as good as they're going to feel all day.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
I know alcohol is not the end all be all. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But you know what? There is something to say. I mean, like, I guess for our reasons, you know, you get together on a Saturday football and you're getting together and a bunch of guys and the beers are flowing back. Conversation gets better as time goes on. Yeah. People become funnier, whether they're actually funny or not, I don't even know. But there's something to say.
Well, people are just letting their guard down and not being stressed out with their lives. And it's just like you can actually concentrate on good conversation and, yeah, it's a lot of laughs too. I mean, just because it's kind of organic. It just happens. It's mm-hmm. not. There's no intent. It's just everybody just being natural helping you get to a spot where it's like, okay, I'm forgetting about my shit at work, my shitty job, my whatever issues of life, period, and you just kind of forget about it for a little bit, mm-hmm. which is beneficial to all.
Without a doubt.
And we're fortunate, too, in our group that we don't have that one or two guys that – you know, after they have like six pack, they're ready to start swinging. And the first sign that somebody pisses them off, or you got to be on edge worrying about, well, this guy, you know, after he drinks so much, and then don't let him get into the whiskey, or else there's going to be a fight. Now, fortunately, yeah. We don't have that because that's uncomfortable. I don't like anything like that when you get people, you know, drunk and just confrontational, and you know, they're ready to throw down at the smallest things, you know, just whatever.
Now, does that happen much with the vets being the vets? And I know there's no tolerance for that stuff in a club. But, like, when's the last time something like that has occurred at the vets club? You don't have to mention names, but, I mean, is it?
Like a physical altercation?
No, just as in, you know what, fuck you, Matt.
Tempers got heated?
Yeah, tempers got heated.
I think that, the other day.
I think that happens a decent amount.
Does it? More than...
Yeah, but it depends on who it is. Like, if it's within a certain friendship group and people are going at it, it's to us, it's, like, not a big deal. I mean, I'm sure I've been involved in them, but, like, nothing, like, escalate.
Let's go out and settle it.
But as far as like somebody who wouldn't be classified as friends, I would say it happens a little bit. People get heated in there. I mean, there's a lot of drunk guys in there.
I was gonna say there's a lot of testosterone, or maybe even lack thereof,
and lack of brain cells. A lot of lack of brain
cells and stuff like that.
Like any club, there's probably guys in there you want to see get their ass beat, and without naming names.
There's no doubt.
I bet people can take some guesses, though.
Yes, they'd be right.
You'd probably have some behind-the-scenes side bets going on, like, let this fucking happen, please. Please, please, please.
And if you were there, you would probably just maybe, if the guy that you want to get his ass beat, you know, take a couple extra seconds before you step in and break
right,
it up.
Right,
Just let it happen. Maybe
there's some entitlement there from some people that you probably would like to see them get a fat lip or something, you know, mm-hmm. just... know
broken
their place a little bit.
Yeah, that's understandable. That's understandable. Did you guys see change gears a little bit? So I was reading, I think it was last night, where a cop and his wife, I don't think he may have got arrested. I'm not 100% sure about the story, but he made his young daughter stand outside with a sign. It was very cold outside. A sign that she was guilty of doing something in the house. Okay. And that was kind of her punishment, that she had to stand outside with a sign. But I guess there's more to the backstory. I guess, unfortunately, the daughter, I want to say she's 8 or 10 years old.
Jesus.
She's threatened to kill them before. Like, she's a little wackadoo. Threatens to call the cops. Doesn't listen to them in the house. Pees herself. Pees on furniture. A lot of spiteful shit. And actually, ironically enough, and this actually seems made up, but he was on duty that day, and he's the one that got the call.
Oh, geez.
To come to his own house. So I guess him and his wife got his hand slapped, and I don't know if they got arrested. I can't remember that. But the guy that called, I guess, confronted the cop about it, because I guess he showed up on the scene too and said, you have no idea the backstory. And he went A to Z on what his daughter has done through her short period of time. Any punishment that we've tried to do has not worked. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're trying to. Mm-hmm. I guess at the end of the day, is it any of our business? I mean, I believe that there is a such thing as child endangerment. I do believe that the fact of matter, you know, smacking your kid's butt as opposed to beating a kid.
Right.
Two different
punching them in the face.
Punching in the face. Right. There's variances of all that.
Yeah.
But is it our business with that kind of stuff to...
No, not really. I mean, as long as he's not, you know, harming the girl, not my business.
I guess what he said was they were the biggest bitch is obviously, I want to say it was one of those below freezing days. They would make her stand out there for 30 minutes, come in for 10 minutes to get warm, and then go back out there for 30 minutes. So conscientious, I guess. Is it the right approach? I don't know. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody's...
Maybe we had ideas, right?
Run out of ideas. And I think, yeah, I mean, right. I know I'm blessed. I mean, Luke's a jack off at times, but I know that he knew when enough was enough,
yeah,
that whatever it was, then enough was enough. I knew that with my dad. I mean, when I knew whatever that limit was, that if I crossed that limit, that he didn't have to go to plan B, C, and D with me. I don't know how your kids were. I would imagine they were good, that if you got to that point or whatever. Nobody knows what it's like to live with a kid that's a fucking monster that probably gets everything that she wants and then fucking pulls these cards. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
read she must time. Have some serious mental issue. I mean, if doing all that, how old was she? Eight or ten.
Now, granted, I think that we've all probably had that time in life. Off the cuff, you know, Paul Doyle pissed me off, and I either said it underneath my breath, "I wish you die." Like at a young age, something dumb like that. So I don't want to. I want to take that for a grain of salt because it may be just words where she wasn't pulling out a knife and trying to kill them, kind of thing. I guess when.
I guess if you witness something like something that is out of the ordinary, like you said, if the girl's out there and they've got her tied up to a tree so she can't run away,
well, that would be different.
Things like that. But I mean, is it up to us to question their methods?
We have no idea what went on in the house.
That's exactly right, and that's kind of like, and but also we've come to a day and age where, you know what I mean, it's not unfathomable now that, you know, what we just read the other day, that what a mom kept her kid locked up for 20 years. Like, it's not. So
yeah, no,
where's the balance in life where, okay, your spider senses come out and say something's not right, but is it my business really to even to proceed with something like this? I mean,
it's tough because, you know, with what we talked about recently about human trafficking and about that girl getting just going missing down there in Dominican Republic. I mean, so you also have that. It's like, okay, you're punishing your daughter. What if she gets abducted outside of your home? There's a lot of things in today's world that maybe you didn't have to deal with back in the day because you can't trust people at all. But going in somebody's house and trying to tell them how to do it, I would stay away from that.
Yeah.
You just never know. I mean, there's so many things that can be taken out of context. I mean, so many situations where you know, you have no idea. Like you said, Jeff, she could have been threatening them. She could have done things that you couldn't even fathom, and they're trying to teach her a lesson the best they can, and they're out of ideas. But it happens all the time. I mean, there's situations where, you know, you'll see a video of some guy, like maybe like bear hugging a girl or something like that, and she's kicking and screaming and blah blah blah, and people will immediately say, what's he doing? Like, leave the girl alone or whatever. But they didn't see the beginning of it when she ran at him with a ball bat and tried to hit him, and he's basically trying to de-escalate the situation. I'm not saying this is always the way it works out, but a lot of times people are, everybody assumes the worst unless you know all the facts or you see everything that actually happened there. You can't always just assume somebody's doing something terrible. You need to go fill in the blanks before you make the assessment. I think that's like getting anything.
And it's tough because, like, you might not want to be involved, and then say if you suspect something, but you don't, you know, you don't do anything or don't say anything, and then something really bad happens. That'd be like if you had like an 8-year-old girl that lives next door. You just notice her appearance looks totally different. Like, she's lost weight. She looks just not emaciated, but just looks different to cause you enough concern. Do you alert authorities? Do you go next door and ask them? I mean. Or you just remain silent, and then, you know, 3 weeks later, the girl's dead. I mean,
that's a tough thing.
That is, it's tough, man. It really is. But I agree. I think at the end of the day, we live in such a entitlement society that the fact of matter that everybody needs to know, I mean, especially social media, everybody needs to know what everybody's doing. I mean, it's none of my business how people parent in their own household. I don't think that if I drove by that situation, it wouldn't make me stop.
No,
it really wouldn't. Now, if I drove by every day, And I've seen that day in and day out. I don't know. I mean, maybe it would cause me concern enough to where I'd start paying attention more to start getting.
You'd inquire and start to figure out what exactly is happening.
What's going on here? Yeah. But it is sad. And I guess here's the deal. The cop didn't stand down at all.
Yeah.
And the cop was very just from a standpoint. And obviously he was the dad too.
Yeah.
But just like, you know, at the bottom line is we've tried every method. No method's working. Trying to raise a normal's a strong word, but a productive member society. And what she's doing right now isn't helping her cause. So it's a tough call. It really is.
Well, and not that you want to get involved, but if you have genuine concern and it's legit for another human being, a young life, and then and you don't want any confrontation, but then if you do mention it to the mom and the dad, then they snap at you.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, it's none of your business. You just keep on your property, don't worry. And then he wants to come at you, like, cuz you're butting into their business. But you're basically you're just looking out for the well-being of the child.
It's a fine line.
It is a fine line.
I mean, you could be living next door to Ariel Castro for 10 years and not even know it.
Right.
People chained up in this basement. And like, I mean, you'd like to think you'd be more aware than that, but like, you don't know. I mean, you just don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Like how we talked with the human trafficking. How many trucks have we passed where there's bodies inside of them of living people being sold? You have to think that we'd pass it a lot, and it's disturbing, but that's the sign of the times.
Really is. Something else I read last night, and I'll be honest, I think I have a strong opinion, but I want to hear your guys'. Did you guys see now where Harvard is? Did you see?
No, I just heard something about it, but tell me what it is.
If a household income is less than $200,000, they are getting free tuition to Harvard now. If you are a household income of less than $100,000, it is free tuition, free room and board, free meal plan, and all that type of stuff. What happened to the day? You know, there is hierarchy in our world, and there's no hidden secrets. There's people that have money. There's people that don't have money. There's middle class. It is what it is. And when you think about Harvard, you think of the creme of the creme. Right. And, you know, it's not every Tom, Dick, and Harry can go to fucking Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree with dumbing down, I guess, a higher institution? I know how we all feel about higher institution. It's a fucking
currently
joke. It's a joke now. But I guess, what's your guys' thoughts? Like, which I think there's a big problem with that. I have a big problem with that. Yeah. Like, what do you guys?
The prestige is gone.
Yeah,
obviously. But they've also, by having some of the professors that they currently have, it's really messed the school up badly. And then just, I mean, there's so many controversial areas when you're talking Ivy League in general, with obviously what's gone on at Columbia in the last year and a half. With
what about the Brown instructor? Did you see that the other day?
Yes.
That
is fucked up. I mean, the Ivy League to me is like, that is, stay the hell away from that if you can. Now, that is no longer the brightest of the bright anymore, going on merit, going on opportunity, and even on just where they're the bloodline alone, where you're like a seventh generation Harvard student. Like, those days are over. Now it's just wackos and DEIs and all these people that have now turned this institution into what it was once a proud institution that was like the benchmark of education in the United States, Harvard. Like, all over the world, that was the top of the line. Now it's like, I think they've really hurt their reputation, not just them, but all those Ivy League schools, to where even if I had a son or daughter or cousin or whatever, brother, sister, I would encourage them to not go there. Yeah, go somewhere else. There's no benefit if you go in there right now. That's not an elite learning institution anymore. It once was, but it's not. And maybe it never was. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that. Maybe it never was. But I think it's ridiculous that you would do that. It cheapens the whole thing. And yeah, I mean, but I'm not surprised. Everything, all the decisions they made over the last 10 years or more have been pretty poor decisions.
Very questionable.
Yeah.
And quote unquote, like you said, the higher echelon of brains making really dumb fucking decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And here's the deal. I'm all about, don't get me wrong, it does suck at the end of the day when people don't have opportunities because they quote unquote don't have the money to get there. But I would bet my life that it doesn't necessary to get into Harvard if you're smart enough and you're attractive enough to get for where you're going to make Harvard look good,
yeah,
they're going to find a way.
Yeah, to get if you're going to check the boxes they want you to check,
they're going to get you in, right?
That sounds desperate to me by them. I don't know what they're trying to accomplish with that.
The accomplishment was they said they wanted to diversify more. Which,
I mean, they've tried to do that forever. I mean, look, Elizabeth Warren and all these people faking ethnicities to try to get into these schools. I mean, us three guys, we were 100%
finished.
Out. Yeah. The white male, and especially if they, nowadays, when they ask you what your sexual orientation is, which that's another discussion. I find it absolutely absurd that they ask people for that.
It's fucking
on not just college, but like job applications, all kinds of things in the world. I mean, you could be filling out a damn warranty for your fucking new computer, and they're asking you, do you identify as a male, female, or non-binary? That pisses me off. I can't believe we've gotten to that
pronouns.
Point. Yeah, but actually, even to the point. I know that when you go to college, it's kind of like when you go out of state and you don't know anybody and you join a fraternity because at the end of the day, you want to try to get to know new people, and it builds a network far outside. And I would never do it, but I get why people do it. And I never try to downplay it, because if that's your thing, that's your thing. Yeah. I would never want to go to an institution, quote unquote, and I'll use Harvard. I always thought Harvard was truly your upper echelon of financials. Can you imagine being the poor kid? That you had to go away, you don't have your family, you have no resources, and then you're this far away home where everybody's fucking driving a Mercedes, and you got the Pinto. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'd want that for me if I was that guy, right? I mean, granted, I think it's cool how people muscle through and get a degree, and then they all of a sudden start making all kinds of... I think the stories are super cool, but I think if I was a brainiac and I had the options, I probably would never choose that culture.
Yeah, there's... Right? There's I can't attribute this quote to anybody because I don't really remember who it was, but it was a really smart thing, and I'll get it wrong, but you can understand the context of it, is when you attempt to try to make everybody even, it absolutely, it magnifies the differences as far as, like you're saying, financial status, it ends up making it worse for people. Like, they're trying to say, okay, we're going to put you in here with all these rich Connecticut blue bloods who... or silver spoon kids, and then there's, like you said, there's a kid driving a Pinto that's from uptown, some middle to not town in New Jersey or something, and here they are at Harvard, and it ends up being worse for them because they realize how much they don't fit into that mold, and you've tried to make it even, but it separates people more, and it ends up making the class system even more pronounced and more obvious, and that's never... It's never good. No, should we have that? No, we shouldn't. But that's the way things are.
And, yeah. Well, and Matt, how long ago was that when we were up in New Haven, Connecticut? We visited.
Oh, God.
We went to
Yale
University. Just it was I think it was Saturday morning. West Lib was playing football, and we were up there. And we're going back probably 10, 12, 15 years. But
yeah,
I thought, man, I'm walking on hallowed ground here. I'm on the campus of fucking Yale. And back then, you know, you just had, well, at least I did. I thought, well, this is the Ivy League. That's where, you know, that's where the smartest people go, the brightest. And as time goes on, you realize that's not the case. And now it's like, I think most of those schools are all pieces of shit.
Yes.
I mean, as far as the way they indoctrinate these kids, like now I'd be more inclined to go piss on one of the trees that's on their fucking
brainwashing
campus. Yeah. Rather than just fucking admire it. I mean, the things are beautiful, and I'm sure all those, and there's so many
history, and it's old.
Yeah.
Looking,
and it was cool. A lot of tree. It was beautiful, but I'm like, now it's just like your opinion and your whole perception of places like that is totally, totally different.
Yeah. What was it, Matt? It was a brown professor. They end up finding out that they tracked her phone. She was backdoor supporting Hamas.
Yeah.
Like,
she's not the first. There's been several of them preaching out in anti-Jewish rhetoric amongst the Ivy League. I mean, it's pretty bad. Like, I'm talking about on the level of, like, and, you know, I hate that comparison, everybody comparing Donald Trump to Hitler, and every person you hate, you compare to Hitler. But, like, some of the rhetoric there was really, really, absurd, like, how aggressive it was, how, like, anti-Semitic it was. And you're just like, what in the world is this person doing teaching young people? Having those kinds of views, And it's not even that you have those kinds of views, it's that you're using them to channel your views and to indoctrinate more brains. You got to present the sides to these kids and let them figure it out for themselves, but that's missing in higher education. And yeah, that was really disturbing to see what that was. It was a woman, wasn't it? Yeah, But I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. It continues to get worse and worse. We continue to have these stories time after time. This professor does this. This professor this. It's troubling. But I don't know. I don't think we're getting out of it anytime soon.
No, and it's sad.
Keep getting worse.
And Donald J is doing what he can just to try to right the ship
against all odds.
He doesn't have a whole lot of time. When you think about 4 years, sounds like a lot, but it's not.
You think he'll make it through 4 years, fellas?
And maybe God willing.
I don't mean that tongue in cheek, but I mean serious question.
God willing. Pretty much he had to be. It had to be an act of God that he survived the one with the ear. I mean, it's impossible that he survived that. So I'm thinking, yeah, but how much of it gets undone the first day he's gone? I can't guarantee that. I don't know.
When you said earlier about the people that are so smart or that have a ton of money, if you have somebody that's super smart and they don't have common sense, to me they're fucking useless.
I would agree.
Yeah. 100%.
Like if you got the combination, if you're smart, you have the resources, and you got common sense, and you know what's good for the majority of the people, you got something going there. Mm-hmm. But this fucking common sense, we say it all the time. There's such a lack of it amongst these people, whether they're our age, younger. It's just blows my mind that the decisions people make and see, wait a minute, that makes no sense. And I'm not the smartest fucking guy in the world, but I think I'm pretty wise as far
aware.
Aware.
Awareness is really important.
It's sad. Lost.
It is sad. Last thing, do you guys think that with it being tax time, do you guys agree with the more money you make, the more that you should be taxed?
I never really thought about that, to be honest. I know that's
not necessarily
a conversation.
And I don't have to worry about that, but I just wanted to hear what you guys... I was thinking about it the other day because when we were getting our taxes done, she started breaking down the different tax brackets and stuff like that. And I guess I've never really thought about it, so it brought it to my brain. And we went home, her and I were traveling on our way home from it and this and that. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, so just because somebody's making $2-3 million a year, they should have to... Like, do you guys agree that there should just be a flat tax across the board? Or do you think it should be a tiered system?
Well, I don't. If I went out and I busted my ass and did what I had to do, and I was committed to building my own business or whatever, but I'm making a ton of money and I worked my ass off, I mean, why do I get penalized?
See, and that's kind of where my head's at. Like, I mean, I understand. I think the loopholes that people have when they own their own businesses, and hey, they're there to take advantage, like Trump said. I take advantage, and good for them. Do I think that there should be those loopholes where people don't pay taxes? No, I don't. I think that there should be a better structured system where they don't get out of that. But I agree, Chris. I think if you go out and bust your ass and you get penalized for that, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that either, but for some reason I started dwelling on it the other night after leaving taxes and stuff like that. I just don't think that's fair to the system, I guess.
I think tax codes need rewritten for sure. There are too many loopholes in there, but like Dawn said, it's not my fault I pay good tax people to figure out the loopholes. I mean, that's just, they're there. That's everybody else is entitled to it as well. I don't necessarily think that because you make more, you should... I hate that liberal agenda or that narrative where... Donald Trump will give tax cuts to his rich friends. Well, all of you Democratic politicians are rich now, too, because you're politicians. So shut up. That's a stupid narrative. I don't necessarily think it's fair for the rich to foot the bill for everything either. I do think it should be tiered in some regard just to make sure it's not totally out of skew. But as far as percentages per, I think it should be a little bit more, even. So I don't think they should have – I think the wealthy are taxed a little bit too much, in my opinion. So I'm kind of seeing where you guys are. I've always thought that. But they can't – I think a flat tax makes it tough too, because then it may impact the little guy a little bit too much. So it isn't a great thing. Now the way to help this a lot would be to either eliminate or seriously diminish the income tax would be probably very, very helpful. But and hey, figure out other ways to raise.
Brett, did you see the text breaking news?
No.
The West Virginia is going to be looking for a new basketball coach.
He went to Iowa?
No, he went to Indiana.
there's a switcheroo.
Hold on. I thought they just signed the dude from just signed with Indiana yesterday.
Well, this came from Soup. The Pine Room Watchdog.
Who's the guy that's been there for 15 years?
Mike Woodson just left, yeah.
No. They're a guy that just... Oh, Clemson coach.
Oh.
They said last night that he... And that was the other thing that I wrote down, because I thought it was absolutely bullshit that Clemson's in the tournament. Some of the talking heads have them going all the way out to the Final Four.
Yeah.
So you have that. I heard he signed last night, but I guess not.
Ooh. Boy.
That's interesting.
Well, so who's in for the Iowa job?
I don't know.
That's interesting.
No, Darren DeVries.
Well, either way, you wouldn't have been in this year. Indiana was the other team that got snubbed out.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know.
I had a feeling when I heard about the wife hating Morgantown, which I sympathize 100%. There's not many places that I'd rather live less than there. Columbus comes to mind. But actually, I will say, as far as pure beauty and getting around in it, Columbus blows Morgantown out of the water. Not even close. But,
yeah.
Okay. So I heard the wife hated it there. Badness. I figured it was not going to work. It's not going to work.
And Jeff, when we go back to what we were talking about when we started this, when you were talking about being excited for March Madness. Well, perfect example just goes, because when they were talking about the snub, I was reading the article about the Mountaineers this season, where they only had, like, I think one or maybe two guys that were holdovers from last year's team. So we brought in 10 new guys. So now that this guy's leaving, how many players are going to leave? So we're going to start over.
Yep, start over.
So it's a whole cycle. So
your boy Ren Baker, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor student athletes are going to suffer.
Yeah, the student athlete. Wow. Yeah, so I mean, so well, I just and that's that backs me up right there.
100%.
What a cycle of misery college sports has become.
Yeah. It's just sad though.
Terrible. These guys just, how can you? I don't know. That clip of Steve Alford that I sent you guys the other day.
So awesome.
I mean, he summed it up perfectly. I mean, it's who's going to pay me more? Coaches do it just the same as the players.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I remember what you said on the radio today about, you know, what they used to say, and now they the parent or even maybe it's the recruit, how much you gonna give. I know that really pissed off Nick Saban, didn't it?
Yeah,
I think it's driving the old time coaches. Larrañaga left Miami because of it. I mean, he had a team that went to the Final Four. Yeah, I mean that's why he stepped down in the middle of the season. He couldn't deal with it anymore. And when we had Coach Crutchfield on, he basically, you know, he's buddies with Larrañaga down. They both, you know, coached in the same area. Like, you can only take it so much. You have a team that goes to the Final Four, you lose one guy in the NBA, another guy going playing overseas, you have like three of your five starters back and they all transfer. Like, it, and you can't, how? Just because they're getting more money. I mean, it's and at some point, you know, the guys who are actually coaching because they care about the kids and they care about, you know, trying to build them as young men or young women. If you do it for that, you're probably going to get out of it soon. I would imagine like Gino Auriemma would be out of here soon. I just think a lot of these people are going to say, I can't do this anymore. This is just no way to live. They don't care about anything but cash, stacks of cash. And I can give you a stack of cash, you play for me for 1 year, and then Chris comes along and gives you a little bit higher stack of cash, and you're going to see him. There's no loyalty.
I do believe back in the day there was a such thing as a calling when you went into that profession. Who in the fuck wants to go in that profession now?
I don't know how you could.
To deal with fucking these whiny little fucking brats that fucking
and their parents.
I mean, that's brutal. God,
even from the high school level, it's got to be terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's funny you mentioned that, because I had played high school basketball played for Skip Prosser, who, you know, obviously went on to Wake Forest. And I think his one son, Mark, is a college coach. I don't know if he was at Western Carolina.
He still is.
But I ran into his mother. It would have been Skip's ex-wife.
Ruth?
Ruth. I ran into Ruth maybe like at the Italian Festival or something that was downtown Wheeling, and reintroduced myself and started talking to her. And she didn't go into detail, but she just said, what a slimy, cutthroat business college coaching is.
Yeah.
So I mean,
well, I guess we can wrap it up on this. What can you imagine being a coach now and having to go in somebody's living room? Words mean nothing now.
Nothing.
So, and that's from both parties. Yep. Like, you're trying to sell parents trying to sell you on their kid, and whatever that meeting is means absolutely dick anymore.
It does. Yeah.
Absolutely on both sides. Yeah.
On both sides.
Yeah. So you're recruiting some guy, and you visit him a few times. He's gotten to really like you and trust you. Coach, you're going to be around for my 4 years, and you tell him yes. And then after his first or second year, you know, here comes calling the Brinks truck's pulling into your driveway, and you're all yep. of a sudden, I'm gone.
And the same goes for the other side.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
sad. Really is. And it will be the demise of sports.
It's working on it.
It really is.
Which guy's more likely to bail out on the agreement, the player or the coach? It's hard to say one or the other now, because they all
descended right yeah. dice, right?
Honestly, you know what they should do in this transfer portal? You should just have again, here comes where bookmakers or smart people can do. A person has this person evaluated on talent. They have X amount of dollar amount, and it should just be randomized. You should have Indiana has $30 million in NIL. Penn State's got $25 million. And then the player should just be randomly assigned to these who are going to pay their money mm-hmm. for their salary for their season. Mm-hmm. And just because there's no bond, there's no commitment, there's nothing there. There's not. I mean, how many guys do you think DeVries lied to last year and said, I love West Virginia, I'm here to stay, I'm going to build this program? One damn year? 1 year?
No, like Jeff said, words don't mean shit.
No.
The word doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, well. Good luck to those people out there. Enjoy your college athletics.
Hey, student athletes.
Yes. What a term.
Yeah. Well, we're done for this, huh? We're going to wrap up 152. Jeff, it was great seeing talk to you, yes. Matt, as well. This is
a
doubleheader for you and I. So to everyone, thanks for listening, and good luck if you're doing any brackets or making any wagers for the NCAA tournament. Enjoy it, and we will talk to you next time.
Peace.
Later.